Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk Safety. I'm your host, Dylan Sutherland from Protector Safety Gear. Throughout this series, we'll be interviewing industry experts to provide our audience with valuable insights on various categories of PPE. Topics will range from selection and standards to maintenance and care. This should ultimately assist you in selecting fit-for-purpose safety solutions for your site. From these discussions, we will create resources such as Toolbox Talk downloads and blogs, all of which will be available on our website, www.protector.co.za, for download. Let's get into a few more technical points. So what we try to do is we try to create a toolbox where we can share it with the audience. They can then download it and actively use it. So exactly what we're talking about now, that safety officer that's on site, they can take this and it's got the information, appropriate questions. Let's go through that. Let's start with the standards. What is the considerations when we talk about spectacle standards?
So in South Africa, we don't test safety spectacle. You know, if you look at footwear is tested locally, respiratory you can test locally. So there's local homologation. The test methods are still an adoption of EN, but you test it locally. Whereas on the eyewear side, it's an adoption. So there's no local testing. They don't have the facilities to test. So if you provide the right paperwork and there's a SAN standard, which is a direct adoption, if you've got an EN certification on that product, you basically comply to the South African standard, the SANS standard. But there is no, you don't have to send paperwork in. There's no double checking system. It's just, if I can produce an EN certificate, people know that it's in compliance with SANS, because SANS is an adoption of EN, and that's it. They don't even check your paperwork at a certain institution that then state, okay, you are in line. And again, it's a bit of a gray area. I think a lot goes missing in there as well. And so you've got your EN 166, which is the big standard. And then you've got certain EN standards under that goes for UV or infrared or welding, etc., which it's got its own standard, still falls under the 166 umbrella. But then also remember that EN 166, the eyewear standard, falls under the EN umbrella, which falls under the directive, the CE marking. So again, I think that's where the discussion goes missing in South Africa. So all EN standards fall under the directive. Now, the reason I'm saying it goes missing is there was a regulation which they formed in the 80s, which was the regulation. And then you had all the EN standards under that. And some of the EN standards will update themselves. You'll have a respiratory and then they'll add a certain test method. Then it'll become a 2009 standard. That'll become an updated standard. But it still falls under the regulation. So especially with COVID as well, there was a large influx still of, you know, inferior product, non-certified product. And if something went wrong, people often felt that chain of liability goes missing, because the distribution partner says it wasn't me, the importer says it wasn't me, it's the manufacturer. And then it's hard to trace the manufacturer, because the lens is manufactured there, the sidearm is manufactured somewhere else, and it was messy. So Europe then said they want to up the standard, but they're going to make it a directive, which means that a directive it's got legal ramifications. And a lot then happened within that. I mean, as an example, they took hearing protection from category 2 to category 3. They said your certificates are only valid for 5 years. Funny enough, pre-2006, a lot of the certificates were lifetime certificates. So people were still in 2020 saying, I've got a 2005 certificate. You're like, but it's not really how it should work. So anyway, that directive was updated, which means all the EN standards under it needed to comply. And if you in South Africa want to comply and put EN or CE or anything on your product, you've got to comply with the directive. Whereas some people in South Africa will say, but it doesn't apply to us because it's Europe. It's only when you import into Europe. Europe is kicking back saying, no, it's CE and EN. It's our standard. So if you want to put it on your paperwork, you comply, whether you import or not.
So let's just cut into that, because I think it's important that the decision makers can understand. If there are parties saying there's a South African standard. Is there a specific South African standard that talks about eye protection, which would then mark that eye protection?
That's the SANS standard.
And so, but it's adopted.
It's the EN adopted. So it's the same. They adopt the paperwork, basically. So if you can go and test a product anywhere with a notified body and they test it and you produce an EN certificate, you've got the SANS certificate, basically, because it's an adoption.
So in Work at Heights, I'm just going to use that as a reference point because it's easy for me to understand. We've got EN360.
Yeah.
Tractable Lifeline. Our SANS adoption process would make it look SANS 50360. Is that the same way that eye protection works?
Yeah.
So it would be SANS 50166 as the
core? I think the exact number, and I don't have that offhand, but I think it's the SANS 14099 or something, which is, but in that document, it refers to the EN166.
Okay. And it just refers to it as a benchmark almost of what standard should be hit.
Yeah.
Okay. How does the manufacturing locally compare to that of EN? Because I'm hearing that it's not the same.
Mm.
So is it a manufacturing? Is it a testing? Well, it must be both, I would assume.
It's a bit of both, mainly on the testing side. You know, if you look at some of the EN standards locally, they are still behind the updated EN standards in Europe. So if you look at on the eyewear side, there's no local manufacturing, you know, so it only happens in Europe, or, you know, you've got certain spots in South America and then mainly on Asia, that's where the manufacturing happens. But then it comes down to the testing method.
But you're saying it's being certified at a SANS level, but it's not even manufactured yet.
Mm-mm. It's an adoption. So
why are we not just using EN? Actually, that's the standard.
Correct. But I suppose it's good that you can link it to a local standard, but it's a paper process. You know, it's nothing other than taking that standard and eventually putting SANS behind it.
But if they're going to link it, sure, they should be making sure it's the same standard. I mean.
Yeah, and I think at the very least, you should have someone checking all the paperwork and then saying, okay, fine, here's everything, and now we will give you a SANS certificate. Even if it's just because, I get it, they don't have the facilities to test. I know it's expensive, and, you know, but that is a problem with some of the other...
It can't be more expensive than somebody's eyesight.
No, well,
I mean, how is degree. This can't be a discussion.
No, absolutely. And so one of the things that also came out with the new directive is they said, you've got a product, it's got an EN test report. The EN test report is not saying that you comply.
It's saying like it conforms to. It's not a certification.
So we just passed the test. But there's a lot more to it. Yeah. So if you're a manufacturer, as UVX, we had to audit our factory once again in line with the new directive. And they check social standards. They check harmful substances. I mean, we had to pull back certain eyewear cords because they picked up harmful substances to the 0.001 milligram.
But this is, again, making sure that when you guys offer something, that we know that this thing is going to do the job, right? Mm. It's been spec'd for a purpose.
Yeah.
It's going to do the job.
100%.
I think we can, and like you said, we can talk for this for
No, absolutely. For days and just one last point is, so what the directive said is that each product must come with two things. You've got to have your CE certificate, not a data sheet. We often just find customers and we say, have you got the certification on the product? And they give us a data sheet. I can make a data sheet in the back 100%. Of my car. I mean, it doesn't make a difference.
And CE, just so that the audience are familiar, that is a third-party inspection.
It's independent.
Yeah.
So it's got to be a notified, certified body that correct. They do the test and they give you a test certificate that says you comply. But then there's also a declaration of conformity from UVIC saying we comply to this, this, and this, because it means all the liability is on us. So those two is, you have to supply those two. Because often people go, I don't have to. I don't have to give you the paperwork. Now it's public domain, so you are legally obliged to give that the paperwork.
So the people making the decision, they should be looking at one, the standard, so EN 166, They should be looking for a CE marking, and I believe there's a couple numbers under that which actually links it to the investigating body, or not investigating,
the notifying body. Absolutely, yeah.
And then they need a DOC, which is the
declaration of conformity.
And this then gives them confidence that this product
complies,
will work how it's supposed to work in the event of an accident.
100%.
Okay.
And we've often checked that as well. So we can get a certificate and we can check it with that notifying body. Is this true or not?
Do you get feedback from them?
Yes, we can.
This is fantastic.
So we can go to UVX Germany and say, please, can you check this? They go to the lab and they can say, please confirm this. And there's even a website. I don't have that with me now, that the Germans can check on whether that number is actually valid or not. And often they've come back and said, no, this doesn't exist. And so you've got to make sure you
need to make sure the audience understand this. I think it will be really well communicated in the documents afterwards, because if it is something that we can check, I mean, again, I go onto sites, I just put on a pair of spectacles. If that does not do the job, I'm in serious trouble for the rest of my life.
Correct.
It's gonna impact the amount of money I can bring home to feed my family. It's gonna impact just my lifestyle.
Yeah.
There's gonna be serious implications. Mm. And if it's possible that people can research it, I think we will share that, and it's a vital point. Thanks for sharing that.
And I want to make one more point, sorry. So the other thing that the regulation did, the directive, they also made the importer and the distribution partner liable. Because if you then import a product that doesn't comply, you are liable. If it's a distribution partner that imported it or bought it from an importer, the liability doesn't just shift down to the supply chain. It stays with you as well. So that means, Protector, I know you guys obviously don't do it, but you are liable. Mm. Not the company you bought it from or the manufacturer. You are liable as well. And I think that liability and that accountability across the board is important.
I only wish it was better enforced.
Absolutely.
Because I think as much as, yes, it's nice that's the concept, that's why when I refer to the mines, I think they hit these guys the hardest.
Yeah.
Like you said, there's still room for making it better.
Absolutely.
But you know you're gonna get asked the tough questions from them.
And do it, you know. Challenge us. Ask us for the paperwork. You know, you've got to be able to put the guys on the spot and know what you are legally. If someone says, I don't have to supply the report, you have to. So in fact, we've gone as far, and in Europe, you go to a manufacturer on the website, they'll have both,
sure,
because it's public domain, you know, and, you know, we're at that point as well, you've got to have it, and
If you could possibly even share the directive, I think it's quite important that is that possible for us to share with the audience?
Sure. I mean, there's various places where you can find a summary of the directive and what the changes were. So, you know, there's quite a few white papers that they published as well. So absolutely.
Cool. We'll add that onto the documents, and then at least our people can start asking the question, because again, it's their people that they need to keep safe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Better informed, better decisions, people stay safe.
Correct. And I think because we're saying the market's not regulated enough, it's our responsibility to help with that. It's your responsibility, but it's also the end user now that should then help us regulate. And I think COVID exposed us massively on certain items, respiratory, your gloves, your coveralls, all those key items that were supplied during COVID. You know, it really, you know, opened up a...
There was a need and people took advantage.
Absolutely. And they just took what was available, and it just, the floodgates opened up, and some of those products are still there today. And, you know, it's a big question mark, but again, you know, so we've got to take responsibility, and we've got to then say, fine, we'll help regulate the market.
Yeah.
And we do that by informing people and creating awareness about what their rights are and what they can ask for and what does it mean when a product is certified.
And not just can ask for, what they should ask for.
Yeah, because absolutely.
When you're deciding somebody's protection, you're ultimately deciding if they're good for the rest 100%. Of their life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Let's get a bit more into the durability, because I don't think it's often considered enough. I mean, spectacles. I've got a pair of glasses. I know how often I bang them. I can imagine working in a in an environment that I have to wear a spectacle for the entire day. It's not a it's not that you don't interact with stuff. How do we look at the durability? Is it is there certain things that our audience should consider when selecting eye protection?
I think, again, to highlight the importance of fit for purpose. So if it's a fit for purpose product, automatically your lifespan increases. I think that's logic. If you've got the right product, it'll last longer for that particular environment. I mean, if you take a purely anti-fog product and you use it in an environment that's very dusty, that doesn't have an anti-scratch coating, forget it. Might be the best anti-fog coating in the world, it's not going to last. So fit for purpose is key. Then it's your usage during, you know, the when you've got the product. So we've got cleaning stations that we sell with the eye protection. Just that basic care maintenance every day makes a makes a big difference. You know, so our rough rule of thumb is just proper maintenance. You can get 30-40% more out of that product. And then afterwards, you've got things like lens replacement, which, you know, can reduce your cost, etc. But it's about choosing the right product and then just maintaining it.
So you're saying I damage my lens, I don't have to buy a whole new spectacle?
It depends which model you've got. So we've got models that we've got just lens replacement, where you say, okay, fine, years ago, that product, and there you can replace the lens.
And there we have to make a decision. We have to see in the space that, look, there is constant chance of scuffing of a lens. We rather then select something which might be a bit more of an initial investment, but long term we can save money.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at Europe, it's a massive concept still there, you know, just that lens replacement. Locally, it's never taken off for some reason. And I think that circles back to the culture. And that was the other point around durability, because often we talk cost in use, we talk cost of ownership. So if a UVX product, and this is often what customers come back to us with, they say, listen, the current product that I'm using is lasting 5 days. We tried the UVX. After 5 days, it was perfect. But the guy still threw it away after 5 days. That's culture. You know, so now, and they often, again, unfortunately, they just accept it. You've got to be able to somehow get best practice on site so that you do get the durability. Because we often ask the guy, so you've got to cut money. You've got to hit your budget. You've got to save. You know, you've got to tighten the belt. But you're not willing to change your culture to get there. So we've got the solution for you. Let us help you change the culture. You drive it, we support you 100%, and you tick all the boxes.
And that means giving something that you know is going to last 30 to 40 times longer, or 30-40% longer, and it's going to be a much less cost, even though the initial cost looks more.
Yeah, that initial price.
Yeah.
So, and again, that cost in use is gold if you apply it correctly. And yeah, you know, often if you look at numbers, and often when we pitch a product, we actually roughly show them the numbers and we say, listen, based on what you told us, based on what you're using now, based on our trial results, this is what we can save you after 3 months. And it's massive. But often it's the culture that then steps in and prevents us from getting it in.
Cool. We need to ask those. I mean, if we're dealing with, if our audience is people that are selecting this, I mean, we need insight to that. Why is that culture struggling? I mean, you can run trials, you can do everything, but if the culture's not changing, or if it's not being fed the correct information, it will never change.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got to, if you look at a customer that's got 50 users versus 400 users, I think it's still manageable. I do understand where you've got some of your big mining companies, you know, that often they've got a high staff turnover. It's a big workforce to manage, different shifts, different people, things move around. It is difficult. It really is difficult. So, and often as UVX, you know, again, what's quality for us might not be quality for someone else in terms of a solution. So we've got the quality, but often the solution is A, B, and C. And, you know, if it doesn't fit with us, perfect. You know, but yeah, it's just sad often when it's like an own goal. If your own culture is preventing you from having the fit for purpose product, you're protecting the people and you're not saving money. So yeah, but you know, if you look at some of the you know, institutions, you know, like a SIOSH, and these guys are doing really good work. And if you go to some of their seminars and the people there, the safety managers, you know, they put in the hard work, they slog away at trying to get it right. So you do still see a lot of positiveness out there and people trying to really change the culture and do the right things, which for us is perfect. So yeah, but you know, it's an ongoing thing.
Awesome. Let's get into what I've been exposed to. I mean, I'm blown away by the anti-fog. Obviously, through COVID, it was a serious struggle, and I would put on a spectacle that claimed that it was anti-fog. And 2 days later, being on the same site, it's fogging up.
Yeah.
What happens? How does it get through that process that it's called anti-fog?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the manufacturing of how you manufacture that coating is key. So if you look at Juvex, we, you know, you've got your polycarb lens, then you treat it with a hard coat, and then you put your anti-fog on, you know, and there's various methods. The one which is the most widely used method is they just dip it into a coating mix, and it comes out and they bake it and then off it goes. But that literally means it's a little layer on top of the lens. So if there's a lot of humidity or dust, or you clean it, and often they just wipe it off. So we don't do that anymore, you know. So we've got what we call a flow coating, and it's part of the manufacturing process. And then it is a permanent anti-fog. And again, we've got different levels of anti-fog. But often you've got two products on the table. One says it's polycarb clear anti-fog. Then you get the UVX polycarb clear anti-fog, but the one is double the price. And they go, okay, but same. And you're like, no, but it's not. And often the proof's in the pudding, but polycarb is not just polycarb as well, you know. And then anti-fog, you know, the durability of that coating is what makes the difference. Anti-fog inside, outside. And that's where a lot of people, if you've got anti-fog inside and outside, that's it's a good technology. And if it's part of the manufacturing process and not post having a lens and just dipping it, then that's massive. You know, the usage of that and the effectiveness of that coating is, you know, it's actually scary to see sometimes.
So what I'm taking from that is I chose the wrong spectacle then, because I used three different types to get onto a site a couple of times.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there is technology out there that could have lasted the duration of that job.
Correct. And again, you know, you've got... So that's why we ended up with 16 coatings at one point, because it's a anti-fog certain level inside, anti-scratch outside. Then it's anti-fog both sides. And then, you know, we've got our extreme coatings for heat, for cold, because it's a different method. You know, the one repels water, the other one absorbs the water.
Both solutions are essentially anti-fog. The one just pulls it in, and obviously when it pulls it in, it creates a mist.
Correct.
The second actually releases the droplets because it doesn't allow
it. Yeah, it repels it, so it doesn't absorb it. And if it doesn't absorb it, it's not going to get, filled up, if that's the right word.
Yeah, 100%.
But, and then, like I say, it just forms a little droplet that runs off. But now you think of that and you put dust in there, you know, and the combination of it, often it's a disaster. And that's one thing as well. People make decisions in wintertime. They choose a product. Works perfectly. 4 months later, you've got summer. It's a whole different ball game, and they just stick with it.
That's a vital point. I mean, you're selecting your fit for purpose. We can't just say, rock up in January, do an assessment, fit for purpose right now says this.
Correct.
Because in our winters, obviously,
yeah.
One, we're cold, two, the breathing, I would assume, also affects it.
Absolutely. Very, very different.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, you know, and again, you've got to, and that's where the trials also make a big difference. But, then as the seasons change, you know, you got to do your due diligence and make sure that what you're using is actually fit for season as well. But again, that's fit for purpose.
And I mean, some environments would experience this a hell of a lot more than others, because I'm talking about breathing, but if I can think about a furnace, that hot and cold environment must be a nightmare for the people working.
Oh, absolutely. And I think also, you know, you've got to respect the people that actually use, you know, use the products, because that guy's got safety boots, he's got an overall, he's got gloves, he's got a mask, he's got plugs, he's got, yeah, earmuffs or plugs and a helmet and a spec. And I mean, so you talk about a spec in isolation, but you can't, you know. And then you've got to, that's why, again, go that extra mile to make sure the guy's got the right fit for purpose spec, mask, helmet, glove, everything, because that guy's wearing it for 8 to 10 hours a day, often 6-7 days a week, you know. So think of that poor person that's using the product.
And on that, I mean, if we're talking about wearing a helmet, I mean, some helmets sit quite low. I know that my glasses pop up sometimes. Yeah. Is that a risk? Is that what you're talking about when you talk about making sure the PPE is
compatible? Absolutely, yeah. So, and again, you've got different eyewear that fits differently. You know, where the sidearm is positioned, whether it's got lens inclination or sidearm adjustment. So you've got to look at those things as well. But absolutely everything at the end of the day that guy's on, it's got to be able to talk to each other. Because otherwise, again, all they do is they take it off. And then it leads to all sorts of other hidden risks again. So eyewear is just one part of the whole picture. And yeah, unfortunately, I still think people don't do their homework across the board.
Fully agree. I think it's unfortunate. Christo, thank you so much for your time. Thank you. We really appreciate it. Yeah. No, you've got a busy schedule, so we're going to let you go now.
No, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us, and I hope this episode added value to you. If you are experiencing any safety challenges on your sites and require any additional information, please do leave us a message on LinkedIn via Protector Safety Gear's page, or alternatively follow the link below and share a message with us, because maybe it can create value or valuable conversation for future episodes. Be sure to also follow us on LinkedIn. There will be some valuable information shared from today's discussion.